This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support.
Hello and welcome to Sounds Choral. I am your host, James Jordan from Westminster Choir College. I sat down at the end of January with my friend, composer James Whitborn, and we revisited his work Annalise, the first major choral setting of The Diary of Anne Frank. Today, you will hear excerpts from the Grammy-nominated Naxos recording by the Westminster Williamson Voices. This iconic recording was recorded by Ariana Zuckerman, soprano, the Chicago-based Lincoln Trio, and Bara Chandra, clarinetist, all under the direction of your host, James Jordan.
Welcome, James, to this edition of Sounds Choral. I thought because Holocaust Remembrance Day is coming up soon, we would revisit a journey both of us had with this disc, Annalise, which happily got us a Grammy nomination. But I kind of went through it again to refresh my memory, and I'd forgotten, frankly, friend, what a great piece it is. And I thought it's good for the listeners to take a journey through it and to hear your viewpoint. So could you give us some background on just an introduction to the piece and how it came to be?
Yeah, it was a journey for us, as you say, but it was a journey and has always been in every step of the way, this piece. Nothing was easy about this piece, getting it to happen at all. It happened initially because of the idea of Melanie Challenger, whose idea it was to work with the story of Anne Frank initially. She'd been working in Bosnia with some children, war-torn Bosnia at the time, and she'd seen the power of music to heal divided people. And out of that experience, she had the idea of working with the Anne Frank story and initially doing some sort of children's opera. And as we started working on the piece, the parameters changed a bit as we realised the potential. And the more we worked on the idea, it became clearer and clearer that we actually wanted to use the diary text. And that had never been allowed before in any major way. So in order to do that, it was a process of really gaining the trust of the family, of Anne Frank's remaining family, and particularly of her first cousin, Buddy Elias. And although that started as a hurdle, as it were, it ended as the greatest blessing because, for me, it personalised the whole project in an extraordinary way. And it ended up with me not writing a statement about the Holocaust or something, which I'm not really equipped to do, but doing something much more personal. And for me, my audience was essentially her cousin and her friends, people that I got to know who knew her as a girl. And the piece became a portrait. I like to think of it in terms of a piece of musical portraiture in 14 little vignettes that show aspects of this extraordinary period of her life when she'd started writing her diary. And soon after, she moves into this terrible captivity. Anne Frank was obviously an extraordinary human being, a great writer for a young girl. And she wrote some things in that diary which speak to the human soul in a way that you would expect only of somebody of much more advanced years. Her observations about the human state, the human spirit, not only hers, but the things that she saw out of the window, out of the tiny little gaps that she could look through, are quite extraordinary.
I remember you telling us when we were working on it that I didn't realize this, but The Diary of Anne Frank is the second most read book in the world next to the Bible.
I think that's right, yeah.
It's so universal in its message.
It is. I mean, this piece, of course, has been done all around the world, but whoever I've met, I've never spoken to a person and said Anne Frank and they've said who. That's never happened. Everyone that I've ever met at least has heard of her and knows something about her. Now, that's quite an extraordinary thing, really, isn't it? Of any age.
Let's guide the listener. I've selected some tracks for this program because we can't hear it all, but just to remind everybody, this is from a Naxos disc. It's the piece by James Whitborn, our guest on Sounds Choral today. The soprano you'll be hearing is Ariana Zuckerman. The choir is the Westminster Williamson Voices, and the accompanying trio is the Lincoln Trio from Chicago with Bara Chandra on clarinet. Talk to us a little bit about the introit.
And conducted by James Jordan.
And conducted by James Jordan, your host. There you go.
The introit is an instrumental piece, or at least it has a wordless choral element. The very first French edition of the Diary of Anne Frank had an extraordinary lithograph by Marc Chagall.
I forgot about that.
And it's a beautiful illustration, and it shows Anne Frank up amongst the birds. She has wings. She's not an angel, but somehow she's able to communicate with the birds and be with them. And the imagery of the bird is quite strong throughout the diary, actually. She mentions bird song and bird activities quite a lot in the diary. And this was obviously an image that attracted Chagall. So the introit is a kind of voiceless, floating beginning. The piece begins with the solo soprano off stage. So the very first thing that you hear vocally is this offstage voice, and it's kind of the spirit of Anne Frank, and it relates to this Chagall portrayal, which I found so powerful.
Well, let's allow our listeners to listen to the introit from Annalise.
Thank you.
So let's move on. Movement two, which is the capture foretold. Some background for our listeners.
Melanie and I, when we're putting the libretto together, talked long and hard about the structure of the piece, and it seemed an important thing to anticipate the very reason for which Anne Frank became famous. I mean, her captivity and, sadly, her eventual death added a layer of poignancy to this already brilliant writing. When the family was finally discovered, it was all a very low-key event. There wasn't the shouting and screaming and horror. The soldiers just appeared and the game was up. But all that time that they were in captivity, they imagined the moment of capture, of discovery. And she spoke about it on a number of occasions when there were break-ins down below and they could hear noises and they thought, this is about to be it. And so they lived in this extraordinary fear for all that time. And this movement, I suppose, sets up the atmosphere of absolute fear and horror that they were living in under these conditions for the whole of that period. And it anticipates what, as I say, turned out to be a rather sort of matter-of-fact captivity.
The second movement, entitled The Capture Foretold. So let's move on to the third movement, the plan to go into hiding.
This is a movement which is, of course, one of the last pieces in the diary that she wrote before they went into captivity. And I suppose for that young girl, there was a sense of excitement about it. You know, they were packing up their cases, they were or at least packing up their bags and putting on clothes and preparing to go. And she didn't know what sort of difficulties and struggles they were going to face. But on the other hand, it was a time of great sort of poignancy and anxiety of moving into the unknown. Musically speaking, this is a movement where you'll hear the innocence and sweetness of a young girl. You have to remember, as a composer, when you're dealing with a piece of portraiture like this, that it's not about you. And at that particular time in my life, it was just one of those fortuitous things. I had daughters, two daughters, that were about that age. And I think probably at that moment in my life, I understood what a young girl was thinking in a way that I probably don't anymore, because I was quite in tune with them. You know, I was talking to these young girls every day, and I knew what sort of music I could write that they would like, and so on and so forth. And I think it affected the style of music that I wrote. So there's a sort of sweetness and innocence at this point in the piece.
Thank you.
I'd like to move ahead, and as much as I don't like to skip movements, this is an hour program. I want to move to movement 6, the courage movement. It's one of my favorite movements because of this chorale that is in it.
Yeah.
And the clarinet part, which is so stunningly played by Bharatchandra. Right.
Yeah. Well, people have to remember that the Frank family was a German family. You know, Anna Frank was born and, in fact, died in Germany. She was born in Frankfurt. And her mother was never very familiar with the Dutch language. I mean, she spoke, liked to speak in German. Her father fought for the German army. And it was very important for us that we did not use the German language as the language of the enemy or the language of the oppressor. It was actually their language. I mean, yes, Anne Frank wrote the diary in her adopted language of Dutch, but she herself was German-born. Wow. And her mother would often read her German poems at night. And this is one, we don't know whether she read this poem, but it's a particularly beautiful poem. And I set it in a chorale-like Germanic style because, you know, Germany is a country of such beauty and talent and this wealth of talent that passes through that country, and something happened at that time which corrupted everything. But it was an action, in fact, against their own. And yes, we wanted to make that part of the portraiture as well.
Well, let's listen to the 6th movement, Courage. Talk to us about the seventh movement, the fear of capture and the second breaking.
This is, I think, a reminder of that overarching fear that occupied their minds all the time. I mean, can you imagine every time you go to the bathroom, you know you can't make any noise, you can't creep downstairs, you can't open the curtains for fear that somebody will see you. You can't do anything during the day when anybody might hear any sound, because she could see what was happening. Anne Frank knew far more than anyone realised, I think. She was a lively girl and, you know, she might have been quite annoying to some people, I think. But one of the helpers, one of the people from her father's office that helped the family by providing food, Miep Gies, I mean, she adored Anne Frank, but she says that she came down every time and she would ask her questions about what was happening to the Jews. And she told her the truth. And Anne Frank could see people being herded up like cattle, and she wanted to know what happened to them. And she knew what happened to them. Can you imagine living in a fear that you're going to be found out at any moment and knowing what the consequences of that discovery would be?
The seventh movement of Annelies, Fear of Capture and the Second Break-In. going to go to movement eight, which is the Kyrie. One of the constant questions I get as the conductor on the CD to people who do not take time to even read the notes in the booklet is how insulting it is to have a Christian religious text, Kyrie eleison, in a quote-unquote Jewish piece. We both know the answer to that, but would you like to share that with the listeners? Because I think it's actually key to the whole piece.
I'm very glad that you've chosen to play Movement 7 and Movement 8, because musically they really go together. Movement 7 is quite discordant, and Movement 8, the reverse. And without Movement 7, Movement 8 maybe sounds too sweet, but they belong together. The Kyrie is there as an expression of a call for mercy in a universal language. The Holocaust was not the creation of Jewish people. And I find it difficult. When I go into a bookshop, you will see a manual on Holocaust studies, and it will always be catalogued under Jewish history or Jewish studies. The Holocaust was not created by Jewish people, and its lessons are, if anything, for those who stood on the other side. And the text that we used is just Kyrie eleison, Lord, have mercy. It doesn't go as far as the Christe eleison. It's not a liturgical piece. It's a representation of something which is multi-denominational, but specifically comes from a non-Jewish tradition. And it is a statement, I hope, that what is to be remembered and commemorated is something that none of us can push aside. We can't say, now that's part of your history. It's part of everyone's history.
Yeah.
This is a universal happening.
The Kyrie from Annalise.
Oh,
Let's move to Movement 13, the capture in the concentration camp, which is to me equally as probably even more frightening to me. The colors that are in the score and the aural perception of almost the stench of human flesh in the sounds of the strings.
Yeah.
So could you talk a little bit about this incredible movement?
Again, in the orchestral version, here I introduced a bowed marimba, a marimba played with a bow as you would play a violin, giving this very eerie sound. Even with the chamber version, we're able to get a kind of silence in the music. It's a very still piece. And as I mentioned before, when the discovery happened, it was, oh, okay, it's happened. They were just standing there. There wasn't a great commotion. And, you know, they just looked round and the soldiers were there and they had to give themselves in. The diary, of course, does not continue into the concentration camps. Anna Frank was taken to Westerbork. She was then taken to Auschwitz and finally to Bergen-Belsen. And her diary, of course, did not go with her and it wouldn't have been preserved anyway, even if it had. So her story ends really with things still in a position of hope. But we know, of course, the outcome. We know her eventual fate. And there were things that she wrote in the diary that related to that and foreshadowed it. The silence, the stillness. You cannot hear a single bird, she said. You cannot hear a single bird. Again, the sort of bird imagery. You know, she was very perceptive to these things because she was just stuck in this place and she had only very few reference points. Birdsong was one of them. And there was obviously a time when they'd gone, maybe during the bombing and the destruction. And this is, I think, the sort of atmosphere that one imagines in as far as you can even begin to imagine the horrors of those places that it might have been like.
One of the things I found, I don't want to talk too much and let the listeners listen, but this piece is not a movie piece. It is not a kind of musical depiction of trying to paint. It really is, I found, very knit to the text in a very meaningful way. And I think it does honor to this incredibly brave young woman. Hmm. So let's listen to the capture and the concentration camp.
On August 4th, 1944,
So as we close out this program, before we talk about the final track and your observations, I think people have been listening to the Westminster Williamson Voices that I conduct, and this incredible Lincoln Trio and this incredible clarinetist, Bara Chandra. For us, that experience was, it was more than just making this recording. I can say now in hindsight, these students, we went to the Holocaust Museum, they read the diary of Anne Frank, they tried to understand in the best way that they could and deliver the text in a way that they felt appropriate. And I look back now, I listened this morning for the first time in a number of years and was moved again by what they brought to this piece. And the trio, the playing on the trio and Bharat, it, I think, was a perfect marriage of a lot of stuff for all of us. So
I remember they themselves organized a retreat. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Which is an extraordinary thing for a group of young students to do. They went away and studied it on their own and under their own steam. It became a very, very personal, important piece for them. I do remember that. And that was so clear in the sound that they made.
Yes.
I mean, in the actual sound, the quality of their voice. And also for Ariana, this was a very personal piece because her grandfather was a survivor of Auschwitz. And, you know, if fate had been different, she wouldn't have been there. And so it became very important to a lot of people, not just the people who happened to be Jewish in the choir at all. It was something that, you know, that absolutely struck with every member of that choir. And I remember being quite overwhelmed by that at the time. This 14th movement is one of the movements that I played through more than a year before the premiere. We had a slightly nerve-wracking occasion. I'd been working with the BBC Philharmonic quite a bit, and they had a spare hour and a half in their schedule, and I'd been working with them, and they just very generously lent me the orchestra for an hour and a half. And Anne Frank's cousin, Budi Elias, came over to Manchester, where they're based. And I conducted with a small choir. I played through, I think, five movements, which I'd written by that stage. And Budi was there, and his wife was there, Melanie was there, and a group of school children from Stoke-on-Trent, rather deprived school. They sat in complete silence while I played through these five movements with the orchestra and a small choir that was got together. And this was the kind of moment that the whole piece changed for me, knowing and seeing Budi's reaction. Remember, he knew the girl. She was his cousin, his first cousin. They went ice skating together. He remembers her as a lively, you know, vivacious, full of life young lady, not as a victim. And that was the piece of portraiture that I wanted to capture. And I just desperately wanted to be able to write something that the people that knew her would recognize. And in a way, whatever critic said afterwards wouldn't really matter to me if that assurance was in place. And seeing his reaction to this movement in particular was something that I won't forget.
And the piece ends with looking at the sky.
The piece ends with that view that she had out of the attic window. She could only see the treetops, the birds, the sky. And it's a piece of this extraordinary contrast of, you know, the beauty of the upward glance and the horror and hideousness of the downward glance at that time of humans destroying themselves. But at the same time, if you look up, there is the sky, there are the birds, and there are the treetops.
Yeah, her written text from 23rd February 1944 is, "Whenever you feel lonely or sad, try going to the loft on a beautiful day and looking at the sky. As long as you can look fearlessly at the sky, you'll know you're pure within." It was very difficult for the soloist who, no matter who it is, to sing those words after all of this because of their, I mean, it, not only the craft of the writing, but the message. It's one of the most beautiful passages.
Can you imagine? What depth of understanding to write those words?
Just unbelievable. Well, we'll let our listeners listen to the final movement of Annalise on the Naxos CD, the James Whitborn Annalise with Ariana Zuckerman, soprano, the Lincoln Trio, Bara Chandra, clarinet, the Westminster Williamson Voices with your host, James Jordan, conducting. Thank you for talking about this incredible piece that's been heard around the world, my friend.
Thank you for asking me, and thank you for your performance of it.
I want to thank my guest today, James Whitborn. Sounds Choral is produced at the studios of WWFM, the Classical Network. David Osenberg, producer. I'm your host, James Jordan, from Westminster Choir College. You can listen to any recent Sounds Choral program by going to our website, wwfm.org, and clicking on Classical and Webcasts. You can also support programming like this with a donation in membership at our website. Thanks so much for listening. Sounds Choral is an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and WWFM.org.